Well, evening truth seekers, those of you tuning in last night can probably attest to the fact that our dear friend Mike Malloy is not feeling well, dealing with some sort of nasty respiratory virus of some sort. So I'm going to be sitting in for Mike this evening. My name is Jeff Farias. I host the show here in Phoenix right before Mike goes on the air, right here at the 1480 KPHX on the Nova M Network. So I'll be with you for the next 3 hours. I got one guest lined up. She's going to be joining us in about an hour and a half at the 7:30 hour here locally. My friend Sophia, the filmmaker behind the movie 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1, Demolitions, working on Part 2. And, of course, our discussions can go in a lot of different directions once we get Sophia on the mic. She's a person of a lot of varied interest, looks at a lot of situations very critically, and we always have a lot of very interesting chat. A couple of stories I'd like to get to before we get Sophia on board with us and we go off in that direction. This is somewhat 9/11 related. Many of you have heard this, but Loose Change producer and Iraq-Afghanistan veteran Corey Rowe has been arrested and handed over to military officials without bail for allegedly deserting the Army. Rowe was arrested on a military warrant, brought to the attention of deputies in Oneonta, New York's police department, received information from a source outside that department. Arrests and court-martials for deserters are incredibly rare, and this appears to be an obvious case of political persecution as the Loose Change crew prepared the cinematic release of the final version of their popular documentary. Supposed to be out sometime this fall. I believe they got Charlie Sheen as narrator. According to MSNBC, despite a rise in desertions from the Army as the Iraq War drags on to its fifth year, the U.S. military does almost nothing to find those who flee and rarely prosecute those it gets its hands on. The Army court-martialed just 5% of deserters last year, with that number dropping to just 1% or less for Navy and Marines. Rowe enlisted in the Army in August 2001 and left in June 2005. He has been out of the Army for 2 years, oh, more than 2 years. He was previously arrested under similar circumstances, but was immediately released. This comes to us from Alex Jones' Prison Planet website. Also wanted to throw this story out there. I talked about it a little bit on Monday on my program, but it hasn't seemed to catch very much attention in the mainstream media, and I find it odd. And it's a story of Peter DeFazio. Peter DeFazio is a congressman from Oregon, a Democrat, a member of the Homeland Security Committee. He has been denied access to the classified documents concerning the continuity of government, essentially Bush's NSPD 51. A number of people in DeFazio's district contacted him with their concerns about a conspiracy and what this document represents. So he decided to look into it. Now, most members of the Homeland Security Committee are allowed to go into a special room they call the bubble room, where they can go in and look at classified documents. That's part of being on the Homeland Security Committee. And he was denied access. Quoted as saying, maybe the people who think there's a conspiracy out there are right. Apparently, Senator Hillary Clinton was also denied a briefing on how the Pentagon planned to safely withdraw American troops from Iraq. She is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. The old saying goes, if you got nothing to hide, why all the secrecy? The AP, earlier today, AP released this little gem. U.S. military commander in charge of defending the U.S. homeland said Tuesday that he believes there are Al-Qaeda cells in the United States or people working to create them. Air Force General Victor Jean Renouart said that while the terrorism threat within the nation's boundaries has increased in the past year, officials have strengthened intelligence sharing, particularly in an effort to shore up weaknesses in security at U.S. ports. Quote, I believe there are cells in the United States, or at least people who aspire to create cells in the United States, Renouart said in an interview with the Associated Press. To assume that there are not those cells is naive, and so we have to take that threat seriously. He added, I am concerned that this will happen this summer. I have to be concerned that it could happen any day. Boo! Scared yet? So from Chertoff's gut to General Renard, or whatever the hell his name is. Also spoke a little bit on my program about the FBI actively trying to recruit citizen spies, people in different neighborhoods, to report on goings-on about them. As the net tightens around Americans' freedoms, and the Bush administration retreats into more and more secrecy, to the point where they send the Attorney General out there to just blatantly lie to Congress, thumbing his nose at the Constitution and the entire process of American government, and thus far gotten away with it. Although apparently there were some documents. I was in the chat room at Nova M Radio, and apparently on MSNBC tonight, they were talking about some documents were released proving that essentially Alberto Gonzalez has perjured himself before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, many of us watching this case could make a pretty good argument that Alberto Gonzalez should have been gone months ago, the first time he was caught lying to the Congress. But the president stands behind his little buddy. Like Mike calls him, Torquemada. Accurate, I prefer Abu Gonzalez myself. He can be impeached. The Senate, the House has that option to offer impeachment of Alberto Gonzalez for lying. He lied to the House committee as well. But will he? Will the Senate step up and actually, when confronted, when mocked, as they were in yesterday's proceedings, will they actually do something about it? Because if they don't, it's kind of the end. They'll have no credibility with the public anymore, what little they do have left. And it'll be a pretty clear sign that the Bush administration is going to do whatever the hell it wants to do for however long they care to do it. And there will be no resistance. It's going to have to come from you and I. Any resistance in this country. I don't know what it's going to take. I'm through rage fatigue. I've been through it. I've come out on the other side. I don't need rage anymore. But I do need action. And I do need to see some change. And I do need to see America become America again. When we get back, I'll open up the phones. We'll try and get get a lot of callers in the next hour or so. I'm going to bring Sophia on at 7:30, and we're probably going to backtrack a little bit. It kind of occurred to me that I've been neck deep in this whole 9/11 thing for quite a while, and it's time to kind of go back and remedial review. We'll talk all about it. I'll be back.
with the very lives they gave, the souls of the young and brave, a sign for the world to see, a promise for you and me. Angels may keep their watch, heaven may count the cost. When will America become America? When will America become America?
Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. My name's Jeff Farias. I'm sitting in for Mike tonight. Well, he deals with a nasty respiratory issue. I'm sure all of you who were listening in last night to the Joe Wilson interview could hear that Mike was having a hard time. He was struggling to breathe, and he's seen a doctor. He's being taken care of. Hopefully, he'll be back with us real soon. But we're monitoring his progress. Wish him all the best. I'll take a few phone calls. I got Sophia from 9/11 Mysteries coming up in about an hour or so. In the meantime, I'm going to take a few phone calls. First up is Virginia, listening on the internet from Alameda, California. Hey, Virginia.
How are you, Jeff?
Good.
It's
how
so
you
great
doing
to hear you.
Thank you.
You remember me? I don't know.
I sure do. Yeah.
All right. It was wonderful that you did that immigration week. Oh my God, I'm so grateful. You have educated so many people.
Oh, thank you.
And I just want to tell everybody in Air America that doesn't get Jeff Farias here in California before Mike, call Air America and tell them to dump Ed Schultz and give you Jeff Farias. I love your show.
It's thanks.
More caller-driven and so intelligent. And you have great music and speakers and people.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, but so and I've been listening to all this stuff about the rage and the exhaustion and the 5 million issues that, you know, we need to turn our Congress upside down to make mm-hmm. them do something. And I completely burned out, too. It just got to the point where I just look at this and I laid out a calendar and I said, okay, there's no way. You know, nobody's going to move because of politics and election seasons and everything else. No one's going to do anything that's meaningful, mm-hmm. as far as I can tell. And I'm not going to beat my head up against that wall anymore. We have 6 months to decide who is going to represent us to become president of the United States. Democrats, mm-hmm. independents, moderate Republicans, you have 6 months. And right now, Miss Hillary Clinton, I'm sorry. I am so sorry, but I don't see change. Mm-hmm. After that nonsense in the YouTube debates where she comes out with all this that she's not going to speak to adversarial countries.
Yeah. And then doctrine.
Edwards joined her. Do you believe it? Wow. Do you believe it? Do you want to break my heart after she dogged him?
Yeah.
After the NAACP outing. I mean, she dogged him. But their DLC, it keeps coming down to that. And mm-hmm. the only way I see everything shifting in 6 months' time is if we nominate Obama, if we kick the DLC in the head, mm-hmm. if we tell the PACs and the lobbyists, you are out.
Yep.
You are so
well,
that, out
that's what
here.
Dean tried to do.
Well, and we
and it bit him pretty hard.
It is really hard,
yeah.
But we've got 6 months to do it,
yep.
And we've got a great candidate to do it with, because this guy has kicked some butt for some
yep.
people that were considered inevitable,
mm-hmm.
inevitable
yep.
in Chicago, in Illinois, everywhere. So if you want someone who's really going to fight for you, and all of these issues will finally, finally get the respect they deserve from
mm-hmm.
the Democrats in Congress, then you cannot let Hillary become the nominee, because nothing will change.
Yeah, or,
and we will be driven to madness.
I think Hillary is the media's candidate. I think that's pretty obvious. That's the story they want
to
tell.
Yeah, and
we
have to change that. We have to change that.
There was a really interesting piece. I guess there was a guy in Time magazine. I can't remember the name. I'll get it in front of me. But a Time magazine writer, the headline was, worries that Obama's popularity in New Hampshire may hurt his chances.
I heard you read that on your show a couple hours ago.
Can you believe that? I mean, they'll say anything.
What are they smoking over
Yeah, they'll
there?
Say anything. That's the thing. They'll say anything to try and paint the picture they want to paint.
And I just want people to know that he is a lot closer than the media wants you to know.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to know that your cell phones, if you don't have a landline, you're not going to get polled. It's too expensive.
Right.
If you have a net line, you're not getting polled. Don't listen to the polls. Obama's birthday is coming in a couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
August 4th. Start getting, buy the paraphernalia from the union shops, from his website and take that paraphernalia and go all over the street corners and into house parties and into streets and into retail centers and into restaurants and into community colleges, and let's get our country back for real. Don't let the media do this to us. Don't get sidetracked. In 6 months, we could change the entire face of this dialogue
I think, and stop
being defensive.
And I think we have to, Virginia. Hey, thanks for your call. I got a hard break coming up. Good talking to you again, honey. Bye. Hey, we'll be right back with lots more of the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network, 1-800-989-1480. That's your ticket onto the show. We'll be right back. That's right, the time has come to yell fire. I saw it at Josh Marshall's website today. FBI is taking cues from the CIA to recruit thousands of covert informants in the United States as part of a sprawling effort to boost its intelligence capabilities. The FBI said the push was driven by a 2004 directive from President Bush ordering the Bureau to improve its counterterrorism efforts by boosting its human intelligence capabilities. The aggressive push for more secret informants appears to be part of a new effort to grow its intelligence and counterterrorism efforts. Other recent proposals include expanding its collection and analysis of data on U.S. persons, retaining years' worth of Americans' phone records, and even increasing so-called black bag secret entry operations. Couple that with the fact that our own sheriff here in Phoenix has set up a website. He's on national television. He's got a phone number where you can call in and report suspicious people. Possible illegal immigrants. But, of course, it's not racial profiling. Oh, no. So we called the sheriff's office to find out, well, what exactly, is suspicious behavior. Well, apparently it's anyone driving an SUV. So we see the FBI trying to recruit people to spy on your neighbors. Local sheriffs trying to get hotlines to turn in your neighbors or anyone with dark skin driving an SUV, apparently. Welcome to George Bush's America. I promise I wouldn't say fascism on my show today, but I'm in new territory now. This is fascism. And it's all around us. And the noose is tightening. Or whatever metaphor you want. The noose tightening, the water boiling, and where the frog's in the pot. It's time to start screaming bloody murder about this. To anyone who will listen. Because there's safety in numbers. Going to open up the phones again. Let's go to Shelly Drobny in Chicago. Hey, Shelly.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Good. How you doing tonight?
Yeah, I wonder if your voice is a little tired today after doing double duty today.
Yeah, I talk all day anyway, whether I'm on the air or not. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm all alone tonight. Anita's out, and I'm in the chat room, and I'm listening to your show, and I thought I'd give you a little bit of an inside story.
Sure, what do you got?
From some deep background, and I can't give you my source. Otherwise, I'd have to kill you. But The unexplained attack by Hillary on the Democratic debate, you know, going after Obama.
Right, he's naive.
Naive and all that
for,
other
for
stuff.
For wanting to talk to people. Yeah.
Which is a little bit hypocritical because the naivety of Hillary giving the war resolution to a sociopath.
Yeah.
And I think Hillary knew that that was a possible outcome, but... one of the reasons is that they believe the campaign, Hillary campaign, believes that her lead is very soft, in that she has a name recognition, and believe it or not, the polling for Democrats, many of them don't know who Obama is.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're not political junkies like we are.
Right. And national polls tend to reflect, you know, name recognition more than anything else.
And yeah, and you know, if you're in the lead and you have strong polling in your favor. You don't even mention the opponent. You don't attack the opponent.
Right.
You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the good news, if you're a non-Hillary fan or if you're an Obama fan, and I know how they're playing it in Illinois because, you know, he's in my town.
Right.
They're playing it this way, waiting for her to attack, and now they're going to get on her because her lead is really soft.
Well, and when you look at the money and where it's coming from, you know, Obama's got twice as many donors. Obviously, it's a little more, you know, they're giving smaller donations, but they can keep giving. And a lot of Hillary's people are already tapping themselves out.
Right, and now. I don't know if you've noticed this, but, you know, Obama, you know, he was terrific in the keynote speech at the convention.
Yeah.
But he's got to develop his debating skills. So he's sort of like, you know, he's sort of waiting for the attack so he can start honing his skills and really come after her. And she just opened the door for him, and I think that's going to be – that's a very bad sign for her because, as I said, she knows that her polling data is it's a soft lead.
Right.
And look at what happened to Howard Dean, you know.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I do agree that she is somebody the Republicans want to run against because they're the most likely to beat her.
Well, they can. It's somebody that inflames their base, and that,
absolutely.
Their big problem
yeah.
right now. You know, I mean, their biggest candidate right now is none of the above. In that poll that we saw last week, you know, that was the leading candidate of all Republicans, none of the above.
Right.
So Hillary inspires their base.
Inspires their base, but she's the easiest for them to defeat because they can really, you know, just completely bring up the past and go after her the ways they did before. So Obama's their worst nightmare.
Right.
You know, again, I'm not taking sides here because, you know, I kind of. Can't, but you know, if you're just looking at the way Hillary is handling this now, I think that it's an indication that she knows that her polling is soft. And I just want to let everybody know in the chat room and everywhere that's a bad sign for her, not a good sign for her.
Well, I also look at the way the media treats the candidates to see who the Republicans don't like or most afraid of. I think they're afraid of Edwards as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, Edwards is definitely somebody they're afraid of. They're afraid of everybody.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have you know a real past? The only charge against Edwards is that he voted for the war resolution, but you know he's since apologized, and you know I think he's come to the rationalization that he's you know well first of all he can speak his mind more because he's not in the Senate
right
so you know so anyway I just wanted to let all the people who were a little discouraged about Hillary. Understand that it's really not good news for her that she did that. And she's better being the victim. As you recall, when she ran for Senate, you know, when that guy, I forget the candidate, remember he came up with that petition or that thing that said, if you sign this and... I forget his name, but as soon as he violated her space and went after her, she became the victim.
Yeah.
And she's better as a victim than she is as somebody who attacks.
That's interesting, actually.
Speculation.
I spoke with Carl Bernstein last week, and that's part of what he was saying. He goes, you know, during that whole Monica scandal, Hillary is the one who came out, you know, looking the best out of that whole thing because she was the, you know, the victimized wife, and people had a lot of sympathy for her, and her poll numbers went up during that
event,
and
so
everyone else went down.
Yeah. My prediction is, I don't want to take too much of your time because other people want to get on the line, but... My prediction is that this was really a bad sign for Hillary.
Right.
Her poll numbers are soft, and when it really gets down into the campaign, I think that lead could really dissipate, and I don't think she's going to be the candidate, but I might eat my words. So.
Well, it'll sure be fun watching how it all plays out.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shelley.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to John in Casa Grande. Hey, John, welcome. John, you there?
Yes.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Jeff. Anyway, the reason I was calling, I've been very upset listening this last couple of calls with Virginia and John, the other last guy, in regards to talking about Democratic candidates, when, in fact, the Congress, the House of Representatives subcommittee, our Committee on Judicial, filed contempt charges today. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, with Gonzalez's showing, before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
There's really, our concern needs to be now, not on 2008, but what's happening now.
Well, I spent the first hour of my program today, John, talking about that exact thing, the contempt vote in the Conyers Committee, House Judiciary, and also H.R. 2929, which Pelosi put forward, basically saying there will be no permanent bases in Iraq, and we will not, America will not have any role in dividing up Iraqi soil. And that was the first hour of my show today.
I heard it, mm-hmm. and I agree with you. And I was thinking that we would stay with that, or you would stay with that, and I think you have, and I applaud you for everything you do, and all at once we're getting this pessimistic view in this first hour of Mike Malloy's show that is, hate Hillary or choose Obama. We have to say now to the people that are listening here to stand by this Congress now, who is questioning the authority or the non-representation of the non-oversight of the previous Congresses under the Republicans for not stopping this stuff when it was happening before. And that's all I want to promote.
Well, thanks, John. No, you make an excellent point. And again, we've only had oversight for the last 6 months or so, maybe pushing 7 months now, and they've done a lot with it so far. Obviously, there's been a lot of resistance from the administration, but obviously it's an open forum here. When I come on the air, I like to open up the mics. I don't steer the topic. I don't force topics. People can contribute whatever they want. That's how I like to do radio. It's a little more democratic that way. But anyway, thanks for your call. Thanks for your opinion, John. Duly noted. We'll be right back after these messages. Stick around. Back. Over at First Draft, a website I'm fond of visiting, an article about George Bush and Nouri al-Maliki. Apparently, I'm quoting here, once every 2 weeks, sometimes more often, President Bush gathers with the Vice President and the National Security Advisor in the newly refurbished White House Situation Room, they got one too, just like Leslie Blitzer, and peers electronically into the eyes of the man to whom his legacy is so inextricably linked. Too much caffeine. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki of Iraq. In sessions usually lasting more than an hour, Mr. Bush, a committed Christian from Texas by way of privileged schooling in New England, and Mr. Maliki, an Iraqi Shiite by way of political exile in Iran and Syria, talk about leadership and democracy, troop deployments, and their own domestic challenges. Sometimes, said an official who sat in at the meetings, they talk about their faith in God. They talk about the challenges they face being leaders, said the official, who spoke on condition of anonymity. They, of course, also share a faith in God. Isn't that comforting? That not only did God tell him to invade Iraq, but God also guides his conversations with al-Maliki. I wonder if they're just laughing like hell when they leave the room with him. Your other guy's snickering in the corner, you know. Who is this Yahoo? How did he get in charge of get so much power? I'm going to work the phones here pretty heavy for the next half hour or so. Let's go to Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire. Brian, how you doing?
Hi, Jeff. Yeah, I was going to talk about the Corey Rose situation.
Yeah.
But, first of all, you're talking about that FBI story about they want to recruit snitches and backstabbing their informants
yep.
and that kind of thing. This country
good
has
Germans,
gone,
essentially.
Yeah, good Germans. This country has gone into such a state of cowardice. I my first college experience, Jeff, was in the 1980s, a semester abroad in Europe. It was called the terrorist semester, and there were bombs going off every week that were killing American tourists every week. Ronald Reagan did not invade Europe. He did not even use the Marines I knew personally that died in the October 1983 truck bombing by Hezbollah. He did not use that as a pretext to invade Lebanon or the Middle East or the Persian Gulf. This country has gone it's gone willfully nuts or ignorant and has allowed itself to be into this scared state of not even being a logical human being, for God's sakes, that knowing that the real threat was by 15 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudi Arabian citizens who are the close allies of this Bush crime family, this Bush oil oligarchical family. And I'll go on from there. It's a disgusting story. I'll move on to Corey Rowe. I believe that he's a true patriot in this damn war in Iraq. Against this war-exhausted nation, those poor Iraqi people, if you're in the military, if you're a reservist, whatever, must desert. You must refuse to redeploy to Iraq. You must become a conscientious objector. Tell them you're gay. Tell them you have a history of drug abuse, you're a drug addict, or you're nuts, or you have some kind of physical illness. Do anything you can to get out. That's the only true patriotic thing to do instead of baiting on this poor, war-exhausted nation of Iraq. Anybody who's in the military should refuse to fire your weapon, refuse it. I know it's hard to do when you're in the war zone. I've been in the military training, but at the very least, refuse to any order to go to Iraq. It's an evil war, and it go by you know the term "sunshine patriot." Tom Paine, Jeff, from the book "Deserter" on by Ian Williams on George W. Bush. It talks about the summer soldiers and sunshine patriots.
Yep.
And real quickly, in contrast for George W. Bush, summer soldier extraordinaire, the sun has always shone during his military career. His campaigning season was year-round. Whenever and wherever across the Confederacy, a family friend had need of help to secure political office. You would also think that Bush the Young would boast in his memoirs about his truly historic and meteoric promotion record. After 6 weeks basic training, by the end of September 68, he was deemed such an outstanding officer that he was made second lieutenant without the tedium and formality of attending officer training school. Bush's rapid commission, despite a complete absence of previous ROTC or flight experience, not to mention his abysmal score on the flight pilot aptitude test, was as possible in the nepotistic world of the Texas Air National Guard as promotion to colonel was in Kentucky's National Guard, I believe it was. He's talking about his Pal Gurney or somebody and his buddy that these are people that help clean up his record. And the book Deserter tells a lot about George W. Bush. And I want to quickly finish with the term from Keith Olbermann in his July 19th speech to Mr. President, go to Iraq and fight, Mr. President, by Keith Olbermann.
Yeah.
And he could, like the other mad Texan who got us into another live-fueled war in Vietnam, LBJ, he was for that war as an anti-communist rich brat. You might as well, if you're really the commander in chief, you really want to land on aircraft carriers, you really want to at least take out a fighter bomber or something like that. You do some strafing over some insurgent areas or something, Mr. President. This is disgusting. Corey Rowe, God bless you, Les.
Yeah, hey, you know, Corey served 4 years, and he's been out of the military for two. So basically, this is he's a political prisoner right now, essentially, in my book. They're trying to, if they can't hold him, at least they can try and discredit him before their movie comes out. And they're going to say, oh, this guy's bad. He's a deserter. Don't believe anything he has to say. I can hear Sean Hannity yapping right now about Sean Hannity saying that after
he's done. Have a good night, sir.
All right, buddy. Take care. Yeah, the commander-in-chief. Yeah, I love Doberman's comments. You know, go over there and fight yourself, Mr. Bush. If this is your war, show some courage. But you'll never see that from the neocons. Hey, if you get a chance, Google online. Find Max Blumenthal's recent trip. He went to the College Republican Convention. And fascinating dialogue with a lot of these chicken hawks. Check it out. I'll be back. Back, friends. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on Nova M Radio. Mike is recovering from a respiratory virus of some sort. Those of you who tuned in last night could hear the evidence of that. He was struggling through the programs. Saw a doctor today, is getting worked on. Hopefully we'll have him back tomorrow, if not Friday at the latest. Wanted to share, we were just talking on the break. Actually, Tammy brought by some food for us, and we're enjoying a little break there. And Ian and I were talking about a piece we saw earlier in the week with Jon Stewart, and talking about the a little montage of the president and his level of expertise. So I thought I'd share that with you right now, and then I'll get back on the phones. Enjoy. Or maybe not. Ian stepped away, so let's get back on the phones. Randy in San Francisco calling us on the quake. Hey, Randy, how you doing today?
Hey, good, Jeff. Thanks for the opportunity here. You know, about a month and a half ago, you were sitting in for Mike, and you let me read my second paragraph to my my thank you letter to Progressive Radio host.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if I could read the whole thing. It's probably about a 2-minute read.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to intersperse it with a couple of bumper sticker ideas. Never listen to a progressive liberal. You just might agree with them. First off, thanks so much for all you're doing to get the word out from our side. There's so little truth coming from our quote-unquote news organizations, so listening to all of you and your unscreened callers keeps those of us trying to keep a balanced perspective informed. But speaking of balanced, here's a point of discussion. The primary reason this country is as advanced and as great as it is that our founding fathers felt it imperative to set up the various branches of government so that each side was heard and their opinions were always considered and weighed. Points were argued endlessly by our representatives. Whether it was an election, a major social issue, or deciding to go to war, all sides got to air their say, and typically the ones with the smartest, most powerful, and compelling argument won the day. The problem, as I see it today, is that those on the right and in power do not want to engage in or even listen to what the left has to say. And by behaving this way, they are undermining the very core foundation of our democracy. Their sheep literally put their hands over their ears when someone on the left is making an argument. They're being told which television programs and movies to watch and to avoid. They're even believing that the left is aiding and abetting the enemy. If history had taken this tack 60-some years ago, imagine where we'd be. Heil, speaking German. I truly believe that if those on the right heard our arguments instead of tuning us out, we could win far more than we currently do. Whenever I'm trying to make a point with a righty, I remind them of that concept, that listening to the opposing view is not only important, it's the right thing to do. It's what made this country what it is. The mind boggles at all of the important issues that the left-leaning progressives have won throughout history. One poignant example would be the end of the Vietnam conflict, a lesson we apparently choose not to remember. If the right had had its way, there was a very good chance that a nuclear conflagration would have taken place. Luckily, cooler heads on the left prevailed. How many socio-political arguments have the right-wing conservatives won that have benefited a majority of Americans? We had better strike a balance before imbalance strikes us again. Another point that deserves a look, what is the left motivation? Why would we want to buck the system? Why wouldn't we just march lockstep with those in charge, like so many on the right? With modern technology and Big Brother upon us, read NSA, FBI spying, why would we want to risk being sent off to Guantanamo or having our credit ruined or our character assassinated, or even outright assassinated, as in the 60s, by some gung-ho right-wing operative? Because, by God, we're trying to save our country from ourselves. As one of you continually says, this country will only degrade from within, not from a foreign enemy. In other words, a faction of people leading this country are literally drunk with power, and they must be stopped before all hell breaks loose. With our current foreign policies of occupying sovereign countries and to grab the oil before the Chinese do, Bush's dirty big secret, and of letting our corporations run roughshod over third world nations, making slavery a common modern day experience, all hell breaking loose is not far-fetched at all. It can almost be expected. Ultimate power corrupts ultimately, and it has never been more true than at this point in our history. So once again, a very sincere thank you to all of you for your courage to speak out when so many others are too afraid to. I hope you are able to keep up the important work that you do. If you and others like you are suddenly off the air, we'll know what happened, and revolution will be in the air.
Thanks, Randy. I appreciate that. Well stated. You know, a couple of points you brought to mind is that, you know, the whole notion of, and I've said this before, Hannity and Limbaugh and this whole machine that pretty much all they have to say is that liberals are bad. That's all they talk about on those programs. They don't talk about policy. They don't talk about what's happening in the world. They just talk about how bad the liberals are. And then when you look at it, Michael Moore did this study a year, like 2 or 3 years ago. If you go issue by issue and see where the American people stand, they tend to agree with liberals on most of the issues. Media Matters did a study just 2 months ago basically saying the same thing. When you look at issue by issue, and it's in the 60 to 70% range, most Americans agree with the Democratic proposals that are out before us. Thank you for your comments today, Randy. I'm going to move to some other callers, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
Let's go to who's up next. I believe it's Chris listening on the Internet from Florida. Hey, Chris.
Hey, good evening.
What's on your mind tonight?
I'd like to say that I feel when in listening to talk radio, I'm a Democrat, and I find that we Democrats tend to criticize our own, whereas they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not advocating us not criticizing our own. When the gentleman called in and he was talking about how Hillary Clinton this and that, because of what we're up against, I think we should stand behind whoever. And the infighting, I think, is a detriment to our party. Whereas they don't fight.
They're a lot more willing to march in lockstep. I don't. Did you read John Dean's Conservatives Without Conscience?
Yes, I did.
I mean, it sort of ties into that somewhat. And again, not all conservatives, not all Republicans fall into this, but there is much more of a tendency to crave a daddy figure, somebody who tells you what you're supposed to be doing.
I'm not advocating.
I don't think the left will ever be able to move that.
No. I'm not. But maybe that's why we can't get anybody in. We can't get anybody elected.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need
circular firing squad. Yeah. Believe me, I've gone out and made the same point. But again, it's just who we are.
I agree.
You know,
I
psychologically. Deep
and
down.
could we therefore there be our own worst enemy?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, that's always been the case with the left. It's always been splintered. As long as I've been alive, it's always been, you know, the labor people don't really like the anti-war people, and they don't get along with. And now we see the 9/11 truth people. There's conflicts with the anti-war movement and the labor. And again, we end up just shooting ourselves in the foot, or worse. I understand your plea, but I just think it's in our DNA. We're always going to be brawling at one another. We're always going to be shouting one another down. It's always going to be messy.
All for it, but I think we got to get in there first.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, usually what happens is by the time the election comes around, the left kind of comes together, put their differences aside, and get behind the other candidate. That was pretty much broken reckoned by Ralph Nader in 2000 when he decided to stay in the race even there was no chance and took it away from Al Gore and put George Bush in the presidency.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
I caught Mike's interview with Valerie Plame's husband. Mm-hmm. His name escaped me, unfortunately.
Ambassador Joe Wilson.
Hey, thank you. I didn't know, and maybe you can answer this for me. Did the CIA come to their aid for protection when she was outed?
Actually, it was the CIA that filed charges that Justice had to investigate because an agent had been outed. So that originated with the CIA.
No, did they give her protection?
That's something they'll never admit to. That's kind of classified stuff. Whether or not they're physically protecting her or not, I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
I would imagine they probably would.
And one last thing, you're doing a good job in Mike's seat.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, grab a few more callers. At the bottom of the hour, Sophia, the filmmaker behind 9/11 Mysteries, will join us. And I think we're going to do a little remedial 9/11 issue. We were chatting about it today on the phone, and both of us are sort of so deep into this thing that we forget there are a lot of people who haven't seen these films, who don't have this information. So we're going to back up a little bit and talk 9/11 demolitions. Stick around. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike tonight. We wish him the best and a speedy recovery. Those of you who heard last night's interview with Joe Wilson know that he was suffering quite a bit and needs some time to rest, get his body cleaned up. Let's work the phones a little bit. Got a guest coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Let's go to Lou, listening via internet from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Lou, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Good.
I just like to remind you a couple of things people probably forgot. I heard that lady earlier talking about Obama, but I'd like to remind people that, you know, out of the 535 members of Congress, the last Congress, there's something like 507 that are still there. The same ones who gave Bush all the power that he now has, including many of those running for president. And I also remember Hillary meeting with Rupert Murdoch.
Mm-hmm. Very recently. Yeah.
Could that be why she is the darling of the media, so to speak?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's a juicier story for them, and it's something it's well-traveled ground. They're all having obsession with the Clintons, and, yeah, I'm sure they'd love to see that race.
Yeah. And she's from Arkansas, and don't get me wrong. I love Hillary, but I think the only person that has shown any consistency in supporting the little guy is John Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people should be bombarding their senators and congressmen when they're home in August, telling them to get on the ball and start impeachment and removal from office.
Oh, absolutely. We got a whole month of them home with us.
Yeah. And I have a blog set up to help people write letters.
Oh, great.
Lewis Views, LewisViews.com. I've had almost 200 letters published in the last few years, and this has some tips on how I managed to get that many published at lewisviews.com.
Great. Thanks, Lou.
But I think they ought to remember that how many of these senators running for president now were actually involved in giving Der Fuhrer his power.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Lou. Appreciate it, buddy. Lewisviews.com.
Thank you,
buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go to who's up next. Let's go to Ron in Davis, California, listening on KSAC. Welcome, Ron.
Hey, Jeff, man. You're really on the money with this lot of stuff. I talked to you about 2 months ago when you subbed for Mike. I don't know if you recall my voice or not, but
sure.
I just want to say that if we don't impeach, you know, the Bush and Cheney and Gonzalez pathological people, we're pretty much done here.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to mention is that Americans tend to forget what's happening globally. And I was in the Peace Corps in the early 60s when JFK was alive. And right now, the canaries in the mine shaft are third world countries.
Mm-hmm.
And what looms on the horizon is something we cannot control. That would be peak oil. And another horrific thing is depleted uranium, which is our fault, which is now circling the planet. Meaning that if you go to Baghdad and hang around Baghdad for 6 months or more, just breathing the air, you're dead.
You're
dead within about 10 to 15 years from radioactive poisoning.
Yeah.
You are dead. So for all the young kids out there, I hope they're listening, but...
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen any of the documentaries about the effects of depleted...
Oh, yeah, and I've seen all of the documentaries.
The one Beyond Treason that's done, Dennis Kynes, one of the
people. There was one guy, a scientist went over there because he was obsessed with it, and he now has radioactive poisoning.
Right. Yep, yep.
The other thing is,
oh, my God, it's just horrible.
It's just horrible, but this stuff is now circling around the planet with a half-life of 4 billion years. Americans are clueless to this. And the 9/11 thing is, I've seen most of the videos, you know, I watched hours and hours, and if you try and explain 9/11 to even a person on the left, they immediately start worrying about conspiracies, or like Ed Schultz, I don't consider him on the left, but sort of middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do to people is I would challenge them with a question and say, you know, I wonder why I start off with Building 7.
Right.
And I would say, you know, I can't. Maybe you can help me. I don't quite understand. Building seven. You know, just get the guy. What's the deal there? I mean, help me with that.
Yep.
And just let him try and figure it out. And when he sees that puppy go down in 6.5 seconds with those massive, massive columns, you know, the cross section of those columns in that building are larger than the Trade Center. So. You know, get them going on that before you hit them with, you know, what was the air traffic and this and that.
Right.
It becomes just too overwhelming for the brain, so they think, oh, you're a wacko conspiracy. So I just go with, could you please explain to me why Building 7 came down in less than 7 seconds, 9 hours after the
plane hit it. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a lot of things like that. For me, it's the Pentagon. Where are the wings? How did 19 guys with box cutters get a plane to disintegrate? Anyway, hey, Ron, thanks for calling tonight, buddy. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, good, man. Good on you.
Thanks. Hey, when we get back, Sophia, maker of 9/11 Mysteries, will be with us for the duration of the program. We'll be investigating the 9/11. Stick around. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike this evening. Joined by a very special guest by telephone right now, we have Sophia with us. She's the maker of the film 9/11 Mysteries. Sophia, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you again. Hey, what I'd like to do tonight, we've spoken a number of times, and we've gone off on a lot of really fascinating topics, but I'd like to maybe just backtrack a little bit and for the first part of our chat today tonight, talk a little bit about your film 9/11 Mysteries. Talk specifically about the demolition of the towers and information that we have that we can put out there. I know you and I have been through a lot of this stuff for a while, and I think sometimes we lose sight of the bigger picture and the fact that a lot of people still aren't aware of some of the basic information that's out there. Do you mind going that route?
Not at all. Right. No, it's actually a good reminder because it concerns the laws of physics, Jeff, that yes. never change themselves.
Yep, exactly. I mean, well, there's everything seems to be in question in terms of the way our language is used in the public and in the press, and we're constantly being bombarded with conflicting issues and images from the administration. So it's nice to kind of go back to something that's very scientific, and the laws of physics cannot be bent by George Bush and his media machine. So the towers coming down, where do you want to start? You want to talk about the columns? What do you think?
Let's just talk about the time.
Okay.
Because that's something that you can't argue. Everyone saw it on video. They saw it on TV, some of them, and it's been recorded. Seismic data from Columbia University puts mm-hmm. the collapse of the towers at approximately 10 seconds. Hard to say exactly because of the big, huge debris clouds, but Columbia University says the North Tower was 8.4 seconds and the South Tower was 10.2. Let's just say give or take a few tenths.
Mm-hmm.
So ask yourself, how does a 110-story building come down in 10 seconds, and it's made of steel and concrete? Never happened before.
Right. A steel frame building has never been taken down by fire before.
That's right. Right. We aren't even going to say fire right now. We're just mm-hmm. going to say, how did this happen in the real world?
Mm-hmm.
We were told that the steel weakened because the fires burned hot, because jet fuel burns extra hot, when in fact, now I'm going to throw around some multisyllabic words, but mm-hmm. jet fuel is an ordinary hydrocarbon. Hydrocarbons are wood, coal, oil, and whatnot. And we make fires with hydrocarbons. We use them as fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And those fires, hydrocarbon fires, never get hotter than 1,200 degrees in what's called an open air or dirty burn. And the World Trade Center towers were exactly this. They were a dirty burn, which you can see with your own eyes because there's a lot of soot that mm-hmm. was emitted as the fires burned for about an hour maximum. And they were small, isolated fires.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of smoke being emitted. And do you remember what smoke means?
Right. It means the fire is ceased.
It means it's an oxygen-starved
right, oxygen,
fire.
Right,
when you try to light a fire in your fireplace and you get a lot of smoke, you have to blow on it.
Right, right.
You have to create draft. That's what they have bellows for
mm-hmm.
next to your fireplace, although some people don't have those anymore. Anyway, so we had thick, gray, black smoke. And those towers, another very important thing to remember is that those towers remained standing after the planes hit them.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually designed to take the impact of a 707, which was the largest aircraft, commercial aircraft at the time of their construction. And this was because an Army bomber, I think it was in the 1950s, had struck one of the skyscrapers in New York.
Oh, it had hit the Empire State Building.
Yes, Empire State Building, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so they designed the World Trade Center to take the impact of a plane in case this ever happened, because there are a number of airports around New York.
And particularly where it was located, right at the very tip of Manhattan. So it was, and all the planes coming in go near it, whether they're going to Newark or up to Kennedy or LaGuardia.
Right.
Right, it's in the path, yeah.
So we had the impact of 767.
Mm-hmm.
And these planes were not maximally fueled. They had been flying around, supposedly, for an hour and a half. And they were smaller model 767s, which are the ones that they take from New York to L.A. They were West Coast bound.
Mm-hmm.
So they were not any heavier than any 707 that they had designed the building to possibly be hit by.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, now what's very important is the real world. Let's live in the real world. The planes hit the towers, and the towers remain standing. For how long? Up to an hour and a half.
Right.
They would have stood with those big gaping holes in them for years. So what brought the towers down in 10 seconds was not the impact of the planes. It was something else. But the impact of the planes, the whole use of the planes, was what I call the magician's trick.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one thing that never happened before. Now here's another thing that never happened before. And the public says, well, one had to be the consequence of the other.
Hmm. Interesting. So the sleight of hand, so to speak.
Yes.
What you're looking at, that's why they have the scantily clad assistant to attract your attention so you're not watching him palming the coin or whatever it is. Right?
That's very clever. Right. We can say the planes were the scantily clad assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you had the towers coming down. Now, if you look at how they fell straight down. They didn't topple. They fell straight down, and they crumbled into fine dust, all in 10 seconds. How is that possible? And they blanketed Manhattan in this cloud of super fine dust and ash. Now, if a building truly fell because it was weakened, why would it be rendered into even sub-micron-sized dust? And I will tell you that a human hair is 70 to 100 microns thick.
Mm-hmm.
A red blood corpuscle is 7 microns. So we had bits of dust that were less than 1 micron.
Wow.
How?
From a plane hitting it is what we're looking
for. Well, we have to say there was an intermediary event, which mm-hmm. was the building fell. So mm-hmm. the building fell upon itself, and its weight was so great, supposedly, that it crushed itself into this submicron-sized dust.
Hmm.
When you look at the video of the towers falling, you will see that there are rows and rows and rows and rows of these puffs of ash and I'll call them smoke, debris coming out, row upon row upon row upon row, uniform row. What's that from? And you'll see bursts of flame.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see pops. People who were there reported the sound of pops, the sound of explosions, flashes. You'll see these things called squibs. Squibs are ejected gray matter. They are, actually, the demolition industry defines a squib as an explosive,
mm-hmm.
as well as the material that the explosive shoots out. So if you look at the towers coming down, you will see at periodic intervals, dead center to the facade of the tower, which means this isn't accidental. Dead center, there will be these giant plumes of gray matter, which you could theorize is the building being gutted in advance of the collapse wave so mm-hmm. that the collapse can be kept going.
Right. Similar to what we see in a standard planned demolition.
Right. Actually, this was more than a standard planned demolition. It had elements of that in it,
mm-hmm.
which are very recognizable. But these towers were very tall. They were pencil thin.
Mm-hmm.
Metaphorically speaking, of course, they weren't the width of pencils, but they were only 200 feet wide.
Right.
So that's approximately an acre. Each floor is approximately an acre. And they plummeted downward, and yet they exploded as they came downward. They created what I call banana peel plumes.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see a classic implosion. You actually are seeing an explosion which has never been done before in all of demolition history. Why? Because when they implode buildings, they want to do it neatly. They don't want the falling building to wreck everything around it. In the case of the World Trade Center, this had to be controlled in a much more artful way. It couldn't be an implosion because the building probably physically couldn't be imploded. It was so tall and so thin. How could it fall into itself
mm-hmm.
if it was a quarter of a mile high? So it had to be exploded in order to do two things, in order to fall, to make the fall happen, the collapse happen, and also perhaps to conceal the techniques that were used. Mm-hmm. Again, this is guesswork, but it's educated guesswork.
Hey, Sophia, we have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the fires. Eventually, we'll get the buildings collapsing. Eventually, one theory I've heard is that the fire from the jet fuel caused the steel columns to melt, and that's what brought it down. We'll address that as well. Be right back with more with Sophia. The film is called 9/11 Mysteries. If you haven't seen it, get one. Get a copy now. Be right back. Back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in for Mike this evening while he recovers from a respiratory virus. I have Sophia on the phone with me. She's the maker of the film 9/11 Mysteries. Hey, Sophia, if somebody, people haven't seen your film, where's the best place online? Where can they go to get a copy?
911mysteries.com. Mm,
okay.
And you just click on the store.
Beautiful. I have done this myself, and I can vouch it's quite easy, and they show up a lot quicker than you think they're going to, actually. If you're in the Phoenix area and you haven't seen this and you can't get online, you don't have a computer, I have a few copies here at the station that I can loan out as well. Okay, we're talking about the buildings and the buildings coming down. We're talking about tiny particles of dust. We talked a little bit about the fire, a 1,200-degree fire. How hot does a fire have to be to melt steel?
Well, steel melts at 2750 Fahrenheit.
Hmm.
And it begins to melt at that point. It actually liquefies hotter than that. But here's the point. Heat and temperature are very different concepts. You can create heat, but heat will not create temperature. Temperature is a fixed, measurable thing. Heat is a relative concept. For instance, if I put you in a cold room of 30 degrees and I introduce a draft of 40 degrees, you're going to say, this is warm.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to feel heat, relatively speaking.
Right.
If I put you in a room of 80 degrees and I put a draft in there of 40 degrees, what are you going
to
say?
It's now cold to me.
It's cold.
Right.
So no amount of hydrocarbon burning can create anything hotter in open air than 1,200 degrees. When it's a controlled burn, like your gas stove, you have a regulated mix of fuel and air, and you can go up as high as 1,800 degrees. That's why your gas stove has a blue flame and not a yellow flame.
Hmm.
Right? The yellow flame is the lower, dirty burn. The blue flame is the regulated, controlled burn. But in order to melt steel, and one of the popular myths, you see, the myths were switched around a lot, and they created a lot of confusion. In the beginning, it was the steel melted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would require burning temperatures of 2,750 degrees Fahrenheit, and you can't attain that with a hydrocarbon fire. So then it was put out by the media and the official sources that, well, no, the steel didn't really melt. It just buckled because it got hot enough to buckle the steel. Well, fine. So if the steel even buckled in a few places or swelled as it normally does in fire, steel will get, you can watch the grate in your fireplace, it'll get red.
Mm-hmm.
If you heat it hot enough, which most fireplaces can't achieve, it may actually curve and give in. But in the case of these World Trade Center towers, for them to come down when just fires were just burning on a few floors raises a huge question. How did they all come down? Why was there no core left? The cores were these gigantic, 4-inch thick steel fashioned into large box beams that were the size of, I mean, half of a human being, you know, from the head to the waist. That's how wide the box beams were.
Wow.
And they basically disappeared in 10 seconds. That's not easy to do. Some other energy had to be present besides the effect of the fire.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Otherwise, we'd have seen pieces of bowed steel laying everywhere if that was their claim.
Right. And we did see pieces of steel, but interestingly, many were found in these uniform lengths.
Mm-hmm.
And some were actually found with angle cuts.
Well, there's that shot in your film. There's that one shot of, I think it's either a day or two after, and it's sticking up, and it is cut at an exact 45-degree angle.
Right. And this brings into question the use of what's called a linear-shaped charge, which is a method of cutting steel in demolition. They attach a charge. It's a device. I don't know how to explain it exactly, but they strap it to the... It's an explosive device. They strap it to the column at an angle, and when you cut a column at an angle, you can control which direction the column will fall in.
Right.
In the case of the World Trade Center, it wasn't important to control a lot of the fall because they weren't trying to pull it into its footprint. They were just bringing it down. So in some instances, they may have, at the bottom, for instance, wanted to control the fall. But the issue of the time it took is one of the most important considerations, and the temperatures that fires attain.
Mm-hmm.
Office fires, when, you know, there's carpet burning and there are file cabinets and whatnot, there aren't that many flammable things in an office besides paper, which burns out very quickly,
right.
Burns up very quickly. So what is there to burn? Those towers were made of glass, steel, and concrete. None of those three things really burn. So how can you say that fire is what brought the towers down?
Fascinating. Absolutely. We're just coming up on a break now. I'd like to maybe investigate. You referred to earlier people hearing popping noises.
Yes.
Throughout the thing. Now, we have a number of people who heard those kind of things, journalists on the scene the day of 9/11. We have all this footage. People who were recording that day have all these footage of all the New York local news people describing the explosions. We have people working in the buildings describing the explosions. We have firemen. We have police officers. All these different people all saying the same thing about us. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things you learned in your film about evidence of explosions.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back after this message with Sophia, the maker of 9/11 Mysteries. 911mysteries.com is the website. And you can get yourself a copy. Stick around. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, filling in for Mike this evening as he recovers from a respiratory virus of some sort. We wish him a speedy recovery. Feel good soon, Mike. We're on the line with Sophia. She's the filmmaker behind the brilliant film 9/11 Mysteries, and we're talking about demolitions of the towers. Actually, we've talked mostly about the first two towers. Before, we're going to talk a little bit about the explosions and evidence of them. You spend a good time in the film discussing that. Sophia, tell us about what we know about explosions in the building.
Well, there were so many witness reports. For instance, there was a Wall Street Journal reporter who said, I looked up out of his office window to see what seemed like perfectly synchronized explosions coming from each floor, one after the other, top to bottom, with a fraction of a second between. The floors blew to pieces. Then you have a North Tower employee, Teresa Veliz, saying, there were explosions going off everywhere. I was convinced that there were bombs planted all over the place and someone was sitting at a control panel pushing detonator buttons. Then you have the famous Captain Dennis Tardio saying, boom, 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 boom. Remember that one from the Naughty Brothers movie?
Yep.
It's as if the building is being imploded from the top floor down, one after another, boom, 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 boom. Then you've got Timothy Burke. The building popped lower than the fire. See, these pops and flashes occurred away from the fire zone in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, this is another guy, Edward Caccia. We originally thought there was like an internal detonation, explosive, because it went in succession, boom, 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 and then the tower came down. So see, when this many people are correlating their experience with explosions, then they're not making it up. This is what the brain is telling them in their reference, in their, we've heard explosions, all of us, in some way or another. So if a building is collapsing, you would think you would hear other kinds of noises, cracking and I don't know what, creaking, and you would see it behaving differently. You wouldn't see it sucked down like this in a wave in 10 seconds.
Fascinating. And William Rodriguez, is he in your film at all?
Of course.
Yeah.
He is a major figure in the film. He was a maintenance worker who was in the sub-basement slightly before the plane hit, and he reported hearing a tremendous explosion underfoot. So he was in sub-basement one, and he heard this boom go off deeper in the building, and then several seconds later, everybody felt the plane impact dozens of stories above. So there was some coordination of a major explosion deep in the bowels of the building, maybe intended to coincide with the plane strike, maybe not. But in the tumult that followed, William Rodriguez tells us that there were explosives going off all over in the building.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed in the building. He defied firemen's orders to leave. He had a master key which enabled him to unlock the stairwell doors, and he allowed many people to escape from the North Tower. And all through this time period, he heard, and the people he was with, the firefighters, heard explosions going off on all different floors. In fact, floors were gutted right as they were climbing the stairwell. They could see the building falling apart around them.
Wow.
And how is that the result of a plane hitting? In the case of the North Tower, it was somewhere in the zone of the 94th floor. So why is the 61st floor or 67th floor falling apart? Why are they hearing explosion noises all through the stairwell?
And again, William Rodriguez testified before the 9/11 commission for 4 hours, and he does not appear anywhere in their final report.
Right.
Did you want to talk about Building 7 at all?
Building 7 was the latest addition to the World Trade Center complex, and it was a skyscraper in its own right. It was 47 stories, which is a large building.
Mm-hmm.
It sat about a block and a half away, and it wasn't hit by a plane. Let's remember this, everybody. Wasn't hit by a plane, but at 5:20 that day, Building 7 collapsed in 6.5 seconds, and it collapsed as a textbook controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm.
It had that classic kink in the middle, which is where they blow the center column.
Right.
It fell directly into its own footprint, and there really weren't any large fires that people reported in that building.
Mm-hmm.
People were evacuated from that building much earlier in the day, so it wasn't the same kind of, you know, pandemonium as the towers, but definitely was a mm-hmm. third steel-framed skyscraper collapsing on the same day. Now, we've never had this in all of history. We've never had steel-framed buildings collapsing.
Not one of them has ever happened.
And we had three on one day.
Right. Certainly leads one to wonder, doesn't it?
Well, I think people need to do more than just wonder,
uh-huh.
you know? Wonder is kind of an idle occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to educate ourselves. We have to try to figure out what this really means. What does this foretell? How does this explain other things? You know, there have been other, shall we call them, deceptions or scams.
Mm-hmm.
This one was immense, and it triggered, of course, this global war on terror.
Right, and it's been the justification for almost everything the administration has tried to do since.
Right. It's a classic false flag operation.
Mm-hmm.
State-sponsored terrorism. There's a very good movie by Alex Jones called Terror Storm that documents other false flag operations.
Right. It dates back to the Reichstag fire and all the way up through, essentially, the history of false flags.
And, in fact, one thing important to consider is that there were military drills or exercises going on mm-hmm. the day of 9/11, which actually diverted a lot of the air defense from the Northeast air military bases.
Right.
And these jet fighters were off as far as Alaska and Nova Scotia doing exercises. And some of the exercises involved the idea of flying planes, commercial airplanes flying into buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the odds, as Alex Jones puts it in a film, of a real thing happening when the very same exercise is occurring, the odds of that are 1 in 1 over, I'm sorry, with 40 billion,
wow.
sorry, 40 zeros after it. So
wow.
I don't even know what, I'm sorry, I'm all messed up
right.
because I can't even conceive of the word. It's
right.
not billion, it's
no,
much, much bigger.
Yeah, we don't have a word
so
for something with 40
one
zeros.
One with 40 zeros after it.
Wow.
That's how small the odds are.
Well, oddly enough, the attacks in London on 7/7 was their date, also had a drill going on, very much like the actual attacks.
And so the possibility is the drills that are almost the same as the event
mm-hmm.
are put in place to confuse the people who are supposed to be protecting us because
right.
they know there's a drill. So they can't tell the difference between the drill and the real thing.
Well, we actually have some audio of that as well. There is actually audio tapes of the people at NORAD, and one of the questions is this a drill or is this for real when the reports come in of the towers being hit?
Right. There were up to, at one point it was thought that there were about 22 drills going on, and now
mm-hmm.
Webster Tarpley, who wrote quite a good book, Synthetic Terror, 9/11 Synthetic Terror,
mm-hmm.
he has postulated there were as many as 26 drills going on.
Wow.
That's a lot of drills.
Yeah. And oddly enough, Dick Cheney was put in charge of NORAD just a month before 9/11. Hey, Sophia, we're up to break time. If you don't mind, I'd like to, when we come back, maybe open up the phones and let a few callers weigh in with some of their questions and ideas.
Sure.
All right. We'll be right back with Sophia, the filmmaker behind 9/11 Mysteries. 911mysteries.com is the website. Check it out, get yourself a copy, and share it with everyone you know. We'll be right back.
Take a moment.
Hey, we're back. It's the Molloy Show on Nova M Radio Network. I'm here by telephone with Sophia, the maker of 9/11 Mysteries. And we're going to open up the phone lines. You've had a full board the whole time we've been talking, but I wanted to just get some things out there, get some basic information. Sometimes I sort of forget that most people haven't heard a lot of this stuff, and we just wanted to kind of go back to the basics. But to get the full story, check out Sophia's film, 9/11 Mysteries. If you go to her website, 911mysteries.com, you can order yourself a copy and share it with everyone you know. Let's go to the phones. First up, Sophia, is Robert in Daly City, California, listening in on the quake tonight. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Jeff. It's great to hear you and Sophia again. Sophia, how is it going with getting the funds together to pay for the 9/11 Mysteries that you've produced already?
Oh, you mean to recoup the funds?
Yeah.
Well, I am recouping some money. There have been sales. There's a lot of bootlegging going on, which is unfortunate because it's better to buy the movies from those videos from the filmmaker, and I do have bulk prices that are very, very low. So I'm also creating a lot of visibility tools, and my website reflects those when you go to the store. I feel it's very important to get this message out. We don't need to just keep making movies. We have to create other tools that people can use.
Yeah, and I know you want to do version two about the U.S. Air Force training exercises involving live-fly hijackings of commercial airliners with planes crashing into buildings that apparently Cheney, according to Norm Mineta, was actually involved in running that day.
Right. The part two would be called Hijackers and Planes. And remember that that's a very different kind of movie because while part one dealt with the facts, the laws of science, which never change, part two would have to investigate and explore all the deception, all the illusion, all the flim-flam that was prepared so long before the event. So it's a different kind of thesis entirely, and it's a very slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Some of the things the aircraft allegedly performed that day are kind of difficult, I guess, if you talk to airline pilots. As far as the airline story goes, they allege that there is these 19 hijackers. Six of them or so apparently have said they weren't even involved. They're still alive. So there's so much to that story that hasn't been answered, and people need to keep in mind it's an alleged story. This is the alleged story that the Bush crime family has come up with, and it just doesn't hold up. There isn't enough proof to back up their story. I mean, clearly that this whole scenario of 9/11, I don't believe any of it's true. In fact, I'm in my mind, I have so many questions. I do not even know if the flights that they said were the flights were actually the flights or just U.S. Air Force planes, because you've got U.S. military forensic people claiming they recovered bodies at the Pentagon and claiming they recovered bodies in Pennsylvania. I mean, then they claim the Flight 93 landed in Cleveland at a NASA, there's a NASA facility there. So there's so many red herrings all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I know you wanted to do version three. In version three, you wanted to get into who benefits, like these mercenary companies, military companies, and big oil, and even possibly getting the drugs back up on production in Eurasia, like in Afghanistan. Apparently, some people have equated it as God, guns, oil, and drugs. So the third version is going to be regarding who benefits?
Well, let's not call them versions. Versions imply editions of the first thing done over. So I do have a part one, which was demolitions. That's what's available now. It's a full 90 minutes, a treatment and analysis of the Twin Towers and Building 7. Then part two will be called Hijackers and Planes, and part three will be called Who Benefits.
So this is all deriving from your original stage performance on this issue.
Initially, we did a documentary performed live. We narrated live to video evidence.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a play. It wasn't theatrical, particularly
right,
in the classic
right,
sense.
Right. Okay.
But that drew a lot of attention. We did it in Southern California for the spring and summer of 2005, and then everybody all over wanted the DVD because people couldn't come to Southern California, all of them. So I put together the first of the series, which was Part 1 Demolition. And this is a high-end movie. It costs an awful lot to make, so if you see it and you like it and you want to donate, feel free, because what I want to tell the American people is it wasn't underwritten by a studio. We're all going to have to fund Part 2.
Thank you, Sophia. I really appreciate your good work.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Hey, Sophia, we got to go to break. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Kevin Barrett, I'm not sure if he's back yet, but he went to Morocco to try and get photographs of some of the one of the hijackers that he had rumors was still alive and living there. But we'll talk about that more when we get back. We'll take more phone calls. We're here with Sophia, the maker of 9/11 Mysteries. We'll be right back. We are back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the NOVEM Radio Network. I'm here with Sophia, the filmmaker behind 9/11 Mysteries. The first film is called Part 1 Demolitions. If you want to get a hold of this movie, go to 911 Mysteries. There's no slash between the 9 and the 11. 911mysteries.com. Order yourself a copy and make sure everyone you know sees it. Welcome back, Sophia. Let's take some more phone calls, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
Let's go to Rich in New Jersey. Rich, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff. Good evening. Good to hear you.
Thanks,
yeah, I had originally called for an entirely different purpose, but I'm glad you got Sophia on. This subject has always been fascinating to me. Anyway, Sophia, what I wanted to ask you was, okay, now I know you did your video, the first video about the demolition, okay, and you're talking about the follow-up and the intrigues involved. Are you planning on your next film, okay, to get into any detail at all about the subterfuge involved in the appointment of the so-called Independent 9/11 Commission headed up by Kane and Hamilton and all the chicanery they went through to shield a lot of the true facts of what happened on 9/11 from the American public?
Right. That would probably fit best in Who Benefits, because I have these three different titles. Hijackers and Planes is Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly there's a definite cover-up going on, which is obvious. That's the implied point of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The commission is very suspect, and it would probably be best covered in the third movie.
And also, Sophia, why has it been so difficult to get people to reclaim their sense of reason, and as you said, put this in perspective back in the real world and bring the laws of physics back into people's consciousness? Are we that dumbed down as a population in this country that we can so easily suspend the laws of physics and not see the truth in plain sight before our eyes?
I think that we are being engineered into very simple thinkers. We are being distracted heavily by consumerism and entertainment and the details of our lives. Our lives are full of stresses that have mounted over the last few years. And there may be other agents involved in creating this internal confusion in all of us. So the idea of having to fathom laws of science about something that happened so many years ago is mostly not in everybody's interest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They say, I have people telling me, but Twin Towers fell in 2001. What do I care? I wasn't there in New York. Why should I worry about it? And I say, it has everything to do with what's happening to you today. And they still don't comprehend it. So my favorite current topic is 9/11 and social engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be putting out a product about that like an interim product.
Thanks. That's great, Sophia. Jeff, before I go, let me just say to you, I had trouble getting down to D.C. on the other day, so, but a friend of mine was one of the people that got arrested, and I will be reporting to you, if with your permission, from the giant impeachment rally that's going to be in Union Square in New York on Friday. I will call you in from there.
I'd love that. Thanks, Rich.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Have a good night. Thank you, Sophia.
Thank you.
Let's see who's up next on the list here. Let's go to Jeff is listening to us on the internet in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Jeff, welcome back.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good.
I just wondered if you noticed, I've been studying some of the forensics on these films, the amateur films, and they've isolated the, I'm just going to say, of 757 coming in, plus not only infrared laser above it, but also there's a shaped charge in the nose of the plane that is blowing a hole actually into the side of the building is why it disappeared so quickly into the side of the building. If you slow down, I sent you a video.
Yeah, oh, I've seen that, yeah, yeah.
Right, and if you look, don't first look at the flash underneath, the shaped charge, but look above the wings, and you'll see the building bow and break, even before the wings hit it, okay? You got to just keep looking at it over and over,
right.
Look at all the different aspects around when it hits there, and that's why it went into the... side of the building so easily. It actually blew a hole in it and then ignited while it was inside there. There was some type of incendiary device underneath it. So it's just, did she ever catch that or has she observed that?
That would be part two, hijackers and planes. And absolutely, I have observed the flash. It's a very odd thing. And right.
Right before the nose of the plane hits, okay, you'll see all around in the whole wing area, it actually bows the building in.
Wow.
It's take a look at it. It's there.
Yeah, no, the video you sent me was pretty, and there's also another one where you can see almost, it looks like a beam or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
there's a beam of some sort.
The infrared is picked up on the cheap handy cams. Yeah. They're sensitive to the low lux infrared.
Right.
Some cams don't pick it up.
Huh.
And plus there's another video out there with the laser lights.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one where it dive bombs in from like high altitudes. You catch that one?
Right, right. Yeah, real sharp. It's making a U-turn and a real sharp
I mean,
drop.
It just
like,
comes
yeah, major stunt.
Down
yeah.
from up top.
Right.
And plus there might have been some green screening going on also with another, you know, with the nose out.
Right.
Huh. Shot. So there's a combo. The planes are actually a diversion.
Mhm.
Okay.
So that's what Sophia was saying in our first segment. There's the magician's trick.
Right.
The video that people may want to look up online, September Clues, is very helpful in showing us how our media participated in.
Oh, they were involved. It was almost a symbiotic relationship between the Pentagon and the media. It had to be.
Well, it's weird because we have so many reports from the first day that just died. I mean, never spoken of again. These same reporters were saying, boom, I saw the explosions, the whole earth shook, right, just as the plane hit, all these things, and then just went away. You never heard from those people again.
Well, you know, that's scrubbing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, Jeff, thanks for your call tonight, buddy.
Thanks.
Take
See you guys.
Interesting stuff. Let's go to Sanchez in Montebello, California, listening on the internet.
Yeah.
Sanchez, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening, Jeff. Good evening, Sophia. Thanks for taking the call. I'll get right to my questions here. Yeah, the evidence is overwhelming and defying common sense at this point when it concerns 9/11. So there are so many things that led up to it that people are ignoring at this point. One of the people in the Nova M chat room wanted me to bring this up concerning Bush sending checks in the millions to Afghanistan in the months prior to 9/11. Also, the presidential directives that were, or the presidential daily briefings that were ignored during the summertime, as well as all this other evidence that people are ignoring. And yes, scrubbing, I can also agree with. So, Sophia, am I asking like the ending of the movie here? If I ask you this question, what are your theories? Who do you think is ultimately responsible for this?
I'm not here to tell you who did it. I mean, that's not my job. My job is just to make a movie about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, is this getting too personal then to ask you what you think? Do you lean in one way or another? For example, most of the people in the Nova M chat room are believing it was Cheney. Do you confirm? Do you deny? You're just better connected. I mean, you know, that's what I'm asking.
Let me just say that this is a very big picture. It's bigger than our administration. It's an international plot.
Yes.
Okay? It's not just America. There were many entities that benefited beyond the borders of America. If you look at the way the world has been run and who has been running the world for thousands of years, maybe it originates there. But we have to know what happened here. We have to look at that carefully, and we have to follow that into the beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So each person, I believe, needs to think about this for themselves. I can't tell anyone who did it, because how do I know?
Well, because you're doing the research, you're there, you're involved in it. I mean, I'm doing research on a separate level myself, but at this point, as you say in your social engineering and standardized behavior, it's like people don't want to believe the truth because it's breaking their little world up. As a matter of fact, what they're doing to us and giving us these little terroristic alarms via Chertoff here the past couple of weeks, they're trying to put even us progressive, even us people who are aware of with our eyes wide open knowing what's going on, they're trying to get even us nervous to join the fold because, as you said earlier, Jeff, safety in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people, like as I said before, the people in the NOVAM chat room firmly, overwhelmingly believe it was Dick Cheney. As you say, it goes higher than that. So ultimately, where are we going? Does this go higher than, like, say, PNAC, the Project for the New American Century? If you're saying international, no one wants to bring up the Downing Street memos. Again, I'm well aware of what's going on here. So ultimately, like, how high does this go?
Well, I don't think we can do much about how high it goes. What we can do is control ourselves, make ourselves aware. It's about how low it is. Us, at the bottom of the pyramid, we are the ones that have to wake up. And then it'll filter all the way up. But without us waking up, we can't do anything about what's going on way out there in the stratosphere in the high levels of control.
Thanks a lot, Sanchez. We got to take a break. We'll be right back with more with Sophia. Stick around. It's the Molloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Arias sitting in for Mike tonight while he recovers from some nasty respiratory illness. I'm sure y'all heard last night. The man was suffering, needed some time. I was happy to step in. Talking with Sophia, the filmmaker behind the brilliant film 9/11 Mysteries. Go to 911mysteries.com and get yourself a copy. Sophia, welcome back. Let's take one more caller. Let's go to Dave in Buffalo, New York, listening to us on Sirius Satellite. Dave, welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. Sophia, I was watching another 9/11 program, and I'll be picking up your 9/11 mysteries shortly. And I never brought it up and talked to anybody about it because I never really saw it until I saw the 9/11 program. Mm-hmm. And it was when they brought down a stadium in the program that I saw. There, in all the other implosions, I never saw. There was like a shaking, a shimmer, a chill that ran through the building. And in the stadium, I wish I could remember the name of the program I saw. It was on the Internet. And the stadium, when it was brought down, a shimmer, a chill, ran through the building real quick, through the towers, through the beams, through the whole building. It was like when you catch a chill. and it ran through the whole building. And when the plane, one of the planes come over the left-hand shoulder and into the building, you can watch the corner of the towers, and from the top down, a shimmer, a chill runs from the top down, and it's not real assertive, and it isn't real blatant, but it happens. There's and I thought it might have been from the impact of the plane, but it's very close in the timing of it. But the chill when it runs down that plane or down the building, I picked up on it only the one time when that stadium was brought down, and I said, "Wow, the two are equal," and it was brought down.
Well, listen, you have to remember that after the planes hit the building, there was an interval in each case of an hour or more. So, yes, you may have seen the tremor of the building as the plane hit it, but the building stood just fine for another hour, and in the case of the North Tower, an hour and 20-something minutes.
Right, but the point on my end, when the plane struck the building and that shimmer or that chill ran through it, I believe that it was the beginning stages of the bringing down of the tower. It was a very refined moment of implosions or explosions to set the tower up to be brought down. And when that plane comes over the left shoulder and strikes the building, and that shimmer runs through the building, and then that stadium is brought down by a shimmer that runs very, very similar in its aspects, and I've never seen it in any other tower like that or any other building.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact that they were brought down from that, from what I saw. And when you look at that, it was a setup or a precursor to the whole building coming down. And they were very refined, minute little explosions that set the building up. It wasn't to bring it down all at once,
mm-hmm.
but it was to set the whole building up to be brought down at a later point with other explosions or implosions. And if you watch it, when the plane comes over the left shoulder, strikes the building, and on that right-hand corner, there's a shimmer that runs right down the building, and it's the same way in the stadium. And I believe it was the precursor or the setting up of bringing down the tower in a whole. A lot of little explosions that brought that, in the end, when the plug was pulled, allowed the building to come down.
Well, we're all going to have to watch for that, so thank you for noticing it.
Thanks,
Dave. Watch for it. It's there, and I thank you for allowing me to say that.
Sure.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Bye.
So, Sophia, I want to thank you for indulging me tonight and kind of going back. I know we've spoken before about the whole notion of social engineering, and I'm really intrigued about your next project. Our friend Pam, the woman who gave you a copy of Beyond Behold the Pale Horse, also brought me a copy shortly after our last conversation. So I've been working my way through that book as well. I'm fascinated about your upcoming project on social engineering. Any hints about what it's going to be?
Well, we are putting out the CD, the audio CD of the soundtrack of the movie, and that should be ready sometime in September, hopefully by September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to twin or pair that with a short DVD that expands this discussion and allows us to see how our minds were engineered in order to accept the official story of 9/11 and to not see what else is in store for us and has been going on over the last few decades. Because humans are actually more easily trained than dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very compliant, we're very easy to school because we have language and we can reason and we subject ourselves and submit ourselves to authority. We want to trust authority figures the way we are supposed to trust our parents. They're our biologically appointed guardians.
Mm-hmm.
During our vulnerable, years of childhood. So humans actually defer the running of their lives to other people. It's a very natural thing to do. And so it's very easy to kind of control their perception of things. And that's what I'm interested in. How is our perception controlled, even collectively controlled? The social waveform, as I call it,
mm-hmm.
is not something that has evolved. It's something that has been made. And the Bill Cooper book, Behold a Pale Horse, is phenomenal in that regard.
Sophia, thanks again for being with us. I look forward to our next conversation. 911mysteries.com. That's the website. We can get a copy of the film. Can't wait to see the next piece of work you turn out there, and I'm sure we'll be talking again real soon.
Thank you, Jeff, and everybody who's been listening.
Well, that's it for me. I'll be back tomorrow in my regular time slot, 3 p.m. West Coast, 6 on the East Coast, right here on the Nova M Network and 1480 KPHX. I wish Mike the quick and speedy recovery. Hopefully, we'll have him back tomorrow night. Good night, all. Thanks to all the callers. Thanks to Ian. Everything you heard came through his nimble fingers. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room and the folks who sent me emails over the course of the show. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to read more emails. We just had a lot going on. So I'll be back tomorrow in my own slot. Take care. Good night, all.